Hi. I haven't seen you guys for a while. Sorry I missed the last visit out here. I probably had the worst flu that I'd had in 10 years. So I was in no condition to come. Thought of you. It was a weekend I didn't want to miss, but I'm really glad to be back. Really glad to be back. Normally, when I speak of other churches, I try to speak well. I think church is a difficult, an important endeavor, very humanizing. It's something people don't have to do, but they choose to do. Everyone who does it is hoping to make the world a better place. But this reading this morning, I have to talk about another kind of church, very different kind of church than this one, that you would have heard about if you lived in on the west side like I do in Oregon. But here it is. It's a KATU-TV report from April 3rd, 2008, about a church in my part of the state. I have removed people's names, but not that of their church. A church in Oregon City that believes in faith healing rather than getting medical attention has been under the microscope for the past few weeks after a baby girl died of health problems that the medical examiner said could have easily been treated. The parents face manslaughter and criminal mistreatment charges in the death of their 15-month-old daughter. The infant died March 2 from bacterial bronchial pneumonia and an infection, both of which the state medical examiner said could have been cured with common antibiotics. The parents pleaded not guilty to the charges earlier this week. The two were members of the Followers of Christ Church in Oregon City, which practices faith healing. They're accused of withholding medical care from their daughter and instead trying to cure her with prayer. The couple also lost a son in 2001. The Followers of Christ Church got national attention a decade ago when the number of child deaths among parishioners was brought to light. The ensuing media coverage led to the removal of Oregon's spiritual healing shield, which protected parents who used prayer instead of medicine to treat deadly diseases. That's the good news in this grim story, though it doesn't mean that the followers have changed their ways. There were many cases of child deaths in the church before, and there have been several since this report came out. A former member of the church, who's a mother herself, this is the report continuing, is now speaking out. "I totally believe it's a cult. Now that I'm out of it," she said. She does not want to be identified because she's deeply afraid of a backlash from family members who are still with the church. The woman was raised in the Followers of Christ Church and was taught from her earliest memory that doctors are a temptation, and if you go to one, you are losing faith in God. She's now thankful that her own children are healthy, especially since she did not take them to doctors while she was a member. She does not believe that the church members will alter their beliefs if the parents are convicted. They'll probably be looked up to. That they made this sacrifice for the love of God, for the church, and for all of the members. The church fought the law on the grounds of religious freedom, which is very important ground for all of us to hold on to. But is it always a space that's good for children? How much does that matter? Let's ponder that after we sing. Hymn number 38, "Morning Has Broken," to lift us up after that rather grim reading. Thank you, Justin. You usually hear that song kind of done the old church way, or the Cat Stevens way. This was an entirely new way. Thank you. There we go. Oh, gosh. I was looking at the folder that I have this sermon kept in, and there's a white label on it, which is something that I used to do about 20, 25 years ago, something like that, and I suddenly realized that's when I started the sermon. I had no idea how to continue. The sermon is called, "Is Religion Good for Children?" I didn't really know how to continue until My son reached about 14. So this one's been a long time in coming. Well, our son took up fencing while he was in the 7th grade. Before he started, we visited the fencing school and we liked what we saw, the people that we met, and we admired the school's motto, honor, chivalry, respect. And it's in big letters, like our banners here. And we also admired its healthy respect for safety. When he started, we saw right away that fencing was good for him. The physical training, and especially the values. Well, one evening, he had 2 hours of back-to-back lessons, so Pam and I made a dash across town to one of our favorite restaurants, where we found a good seat and placed our order for sushi. Sushi, for those who don't know, is not always a favorite with American kids. So we were seizing a rare opportunity. We like eel roll and usually get a few pieces with raw salmon as well. All of it pleasing to the eye and tender to the tooth. Imagine my surprise when I tried to take the first bite and found that I couldn't bring my teeth together on one side. Chewing on the other side was also painful, and I could just barely manage to eat a little. While I don't claim to be a particularly tough guy, I can usually work through pain when I need to. But try as I might, it was more than the pain. I could just physically not bring the teeth together on my right side. It had happened with no warning. 2 days of living on peanut butter and smoothies followed, per my dentist's advice, while I waited for an opening to see him. Because I had no trouble drinking or talking and no pain unless I tried to close my jaw, I decided to go ahead and see my colleague, the Reverend Rick Davis of Salem, who's been a visitor here, for our regular coffee house discussion of all things divine and human. Part of me just lives for these get-togethers, and I didn't want to miss it. I cautioned Rick that we wouldn't be able to stretch coffee into lunch like we sometimes do on account of my jaw. I watched him with envy as he chomped his biscotti. Between bites, he asked, "So what's this that happened to your jaw?" I started to describe the experience and the strange inability to bring my teeth together when suddenly there was a loud click, and all at once I could do just what I'd been saying I couldn't. My molars were touching like they always had before, with only a slight stiffness. The next day, I told my dentist what had happened, and he explained how the human jaw is a complex instrument. Part of its movement is a forward slide that's cushioned by a cartilage disc. That disc can get displaced and stuck, like mine must have done. Well, I joked with the dentist that my friend would soon be setting up a rival Unitarian Universalist faith-healing dental practice across the street, so watch out. People would gladly forego all the drilling and filling if they could put an end to the pain that's killing them by just speaking a few words with a religious leader. Just kidding, of course, but it's a reminder that healing can often begin with a simple invitation to express what's wrong. Almost as soon as you open your mouth, certain things can begin to slip into place. The way to healing starts to open up before you. It's one of those simple, uniquely human gifts that we can give to each other. Faith can be part of healing, and a very important one all along the way, beginning with trust in care providers, medical researchers, and product safety controls, though it's good to always be ready to ask questions if things just don't seem right. Faith in yourself and your instincts are important too, and in the natural tendency of the body to heal itself. But the followers of Christ Church have taken the idea of faith and healing much too far. Faith alone is not the answer to every physical condition. Sometimes you have to ask more questions. And one of those needs to be, is this church good for children? Or to back up a little further, is religion good for children? Some people might wonder, how could it be bad? Well, you'd think if it kills them, the answer should be obvious. But this is religion. And some, like the followers of Christ, would say that the kids are in heaven. And isn't that the best place to be? Remember what the former member said. She does not believe the church members will alter their beliefs if the parents are convicted. They'll probably be looked up to, that they made this sacrifice for the love of God, for the church, and for all the members. Still, I think that most people would draw the line at death. How about serious injury? I have no doubt that many more children are seriously injured in such groups than those who are actually killed as a result of their religious practices. Some of this could be the result of untreated illness, and some the result of supposedly scriptural punishments that are administered to correct young souls. I can't comment on mental or psychological damage that might arise from fear of hell, devils, demons, or evil spirits. I can only say that I wish I hadn't seen some of the horror movies that I did at the age when I saw them. Lost sleep didn't help me much at school the next day. Even if the followers of Christ began to accept medical care for children, but still rejected it for adults, imagine how frightening it would be for a child to see her mother or father racked by symptoms that could easily be relieved by anti-inflammatories or antibiotics, or how terrifying and painful it would be for children to see a parent die in those circumstances. But what about when religion hurts children just a little? Or at least we tell ourselves that the hurt is small and not the main point of the religious practice. How about circumcision for infants or older boys? You may have heard about a proposed ordinance in San Francisco prohibiting child circumcision except in rare cases of medical necessity. Jewish and Muslim parents were upset because this operation is considered religiously necessary for full male membership in the community, not possible for those with the full male member that they were born with. But even if you think circumcision is desirable or at least permissible, what about similar procedures that are sometimes performed on girls in some parts of North and Sub-Saharan Africa, among a number of ethnic and religious groups? This is not only an Islamic thing. Should they face criminal charges for continuing such practices in this country? I wonder what most followers of Christ would say. I know how I feel about any cutting on little people that's not medically necessary. But it's no easy question. What if they practice such things but would never hesitate to take a sick child to a doctor? Is this religion bad for kids? I think we all have ideas about what religions might be good or bad for children in general, but especially for our own children. Here's an easy test. Suppose your child was invited for an overnight at the home of a friend whose family practices a different religion from your own. Better yet, suppose that it's a whole weekend. Would you be comfortable if this was a Jewish family? A Hindu family? Buddhist? Muslim? Catholic? How about fundamentalist Christians? What if the visit was for a week, or 2 weeks, or a month? Would it be okay for them to stay in one home and not in another? Is that due to fear of some kind of harm? If so, what kind of harm? Could it be fear that the host family would set out to convert your child, or that this could happen even if this was not their intent? Might their stories or prayers or other practices be so compelling that your child would be drawn to that religion just by watching? Are you afraid to that their religion might be more compelling than yours, or just that your kids might get into whatever they see, just as they might watch whatever comes on TV. So that's one touchstone to help us think about religion and children. Here's another. What about letting them stay with devout believers in the religion of your own childhood? Maybe they're your own close relatives. Would that be okay with you? In other words, is your old religion good for kids? Was it good for you? Did the good outweigh the bad? I'm not sure how good mine was for me. I went to the same Presbyterian church, if you will believe it, in LaGrange, Illinois, that Carol used to go to. Same church, no kidding. We have a common history. And I can say this, they had a dress code in the 1950s, and I hated the scratchy little clothes. I hated the little bow tie. And I hated sitting still for another morning of any kind of school. Eventually, I refused to go anymore, but that doesn't mean that I gave up religion altogether. I set about constructing my own without a guide. Old Flash Gordon cereal showed up on TV Sunday mornings at church time. And immune to what looks corny now, I was very moved by what I saw. The first one involved Flash being sacrificed to this sort of god, this sort of fire demon, lived in a cave underground, and he had like rubber lobster claws and a dragon head. And I just, you know, I thought that was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. It was one of many things that Flash went through. He underwent what could only be called initiations in fire, and water, earth, and sky. He cast that false god down. He plunged into all these elements and established ties with the beings that dwelled with them, which touched me deeply. Water, air. Of course, I also wanted to lay hands on the swords and ray guns that he got to use. But my parents never took me to fencing lessons, and lasers were still in their early stages. I joined the Boy Scouts, hoping for a guided series of initiations in nature. And at first, things went okay. Our scoutmaster loved the outdoors and camping, and although I experienced some real misery sleeping in a tent, in the cold, in November, in Illinois, I also found a lot of what I was looking for. I loved what one friend called hickory smokedness, the smell that would fill our clothes after hours of activities around wood campfires. But then, that scoutmaster moved on. And we got a new one who was into military formations and drills on a church basement floor and patriotism and a level of support for the war in Vietnam that I could never feel. As a child, I craved a vivid experience of initiation in the elements. I thought that was the religion that I wanted. I'm not at all sure how we could pull that off in church. And I can't say for certain that such an experience would be risk-free or completely free of pain, or that you would never get scratched or bumped or maybe get your feet wet. I'm not sure if a religious experience that's completely free of hurt is possible, or if only such a religion would be good for children. But by the way, what about our own religion? Is this religion good for kids? If you look on the cover of your order of service, you'll see a picture of Sophia Lyon Foz. She was the great educator who shaped so much of our own approach in the mid-20th century. And she asked, what is there in the children's own experiencing that's of importance to them? What kind of experiences call forth a special wonder or surprise or challenge their liveliest thinking and questioning? Or which experiences seem to bring them the greatest emotional conflicts? On what kinds of occasions do they most need adult guidance? Instead of helping children on Sunday to think about religious things, we need to learn how to help children to think about ordinary things until insights and feelings are found which have a religious quality. So she made sure that younger children had large playthings like tricycles to try, and described the joy of one kid who'd managed to do it at church who'd never been able to do it at home. She was concerned about many schools, not just Sunday schools, practices of giving kids smaller and smaller objects to work with every year, until eventually there were only words and fussy discussions about only using the right ones. A reduction from real objects to just little objections. Sometimes bigger really is better. Bigger pencils and crayons, or a bigger RE space for our church. You see where this is heading. Foz would bring an incubator box into her RE classrooms and talk with children as they watched baby chicks hatch from eggs. Sometimes one would fail to hatch, or hatch and then die. But instead of rushing to talk about religious ideas of resurrection or reincarnation, she let children first spend some time with death. She wrote, "Death is not a subject to avoid or to evade. Children need to find ways to accept death as well as life. It should be a subject for discussion. Dancing, painting, and acting whenever the situation calls for curiosity or concern." We could hardly imagine that such a religious education would be completely pain-free. Foz was an educator who may have seemed the very image of a little old lady Sunday school teacher, unless you were caught in that searching gaze of hers. Someone who looked less like Flash Gordon would be hard to imagine. But she spent decades helping children to find their own way through their own initiations in the worlds of fire, water, earth, light, and even darkness. And she never spoke of this as a one-way street. Why would any adult agree to help teach in a religious program if not to learn things, too? Let's turn the question we started with today around another time. Are children good for your religion? Foz would have answered a definitive yes, but she would have meant something very different from letting them die to prove their parents' faith. She would have meant getting down with them, on the floor, in the grass, with the chickens, all over the world and beyond it, in our imaginations. She would have meant sharing their perspective, looking up, down, all around, seeing once again with eyes that are childlike, without promoting beliefs that are childish. God wants some children to live and others to die according to how much faith they or their parents have? That's a childish belief and a dangerous one. And my kid is not staying overnight at your house if you hold it. That's a judgment. As a child, I longed for a religion that was good for me and which I could be good for as well. I wanted joy and service. I wanted people with whom I could share the experience of mystery and wonder, not people who would tell me all the answers I ever needed to know. I didn't want religion to mean that I had to cut something off or have something stuck inside of me, a belief or whatever. That doesn't mean that I wouldn't have enjoyed fencing like my son does, with blunted swords, playing at battling enemies of the good, or casting down the fiery idols of oppression. This might have been something that even Foz would have hesitated to introduce in Sunday school, the kind of boy play. She died in 1977, 101 years old, 1 year before I entered seminary, 20 years before the birth of my son. This year, he served as a teaching assistant at the school where he fences under that banner of honor, chivalry, and respect. I can't comment on how well he handles a sword because his skills are beyond my comprehension. I know that when I picked up one of his swords and he held the other, he made a fool of me. It's beyond my comprehension, as are his skills in mathematics, computer programming, and so much else these days. But I can say that he handles those principles of honor, chivalry, and respect very well indeed. That school has been good for him, and he is good for his school. And you know what? If our kids can say this about our church and our religious movement, when they've grown up to have kids of their own, we can be mighty proud. If they also bring those kids to be with us on Sunday, I don't think that we could ask for a whole lot more. So may it be.